Having a fight over an ecosystem can be very abstract. It's easier to focus the battle on a poster child like the spotted owl in old-growth forests or the greater sage grouse when talking about sagebrush habitat. And the grouse is indeed the focus of a debate, a renewed debate at that, because protecting the bird and its habitat got one approach from the Obama administration and now a very different approach from the Trump administration. And since the sage grouse lives on a lot of public land in the Intermountain West, the federal approach makes a big difference. A comment period on proposed changes closes Friday, December 1st. We have two interviews about the subject on 2 days. Today we'll talk pro-grouse with Dan Morse, who's with the Oregon Natural Desert Association. He is ONDA's conservation director. Hi, Dan. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Jeff.
So walk us back a few steps. I mean, we're talking the better part of a decade or more with some indications that sage-grouse numbers are dropping, and the animal might, in fact, be in line for listing under the Endangered Species Act. Can you take us back there a bit?
Yeah, sure can. Even as early as 2003, Oregon Natural Desert Association had been closely tracking the sagebrush steppe ecosystem and the sage-grouse, and we were quite aware that the numbers of sage-grouse were dropping precipitously. We were also aware of lots of impacts occurring in the high desert to the sagebrush and grasses that the sage-grouse rely on, and urging the federal government and its partners to take steps to conserve this species, because it really does indicate the health of the overall system.
And so so what kinds of impacts have been making the numbers drop, do we think?
Here in Oregon, some of the most prominent issues have to do with invasive species, weeds, like cheatgrass that everyone may have heard about. Also, fire is closely tied to that cheatgrass infestation. Wildfire can burn thousands of acres, as everyone is likely to have heard. And in that scenario, the habitat for sage grouse is degraded for many years afterward.
So those are the big ones. Are there any other encroachments of more economic activity, any grazing that's going on in the sagebrush steppe that's moving into grouse habitat?
Sure. Much of eastern Oregon supports livestock grazing, and livestock grazing can have detrimental impacts on wildlife habitat, sage-grouse habitat specifically. The way in which livestock grazing is managed matters very much for the quality of that habitat. Some of the other issues that are encroaching on sage-grouse habitat, we certainly have recreation use in some localized spots in eastern Oregon that are impacting habitat. There is a degree of mining that is impacting certain areas of sage-grouse habitat. And in other western states, certainly the problem is more around oil and gas in sage-grouse habitat and all of the impacts that that can result in.
Other western states meaning not Oregon?
That's right. Colorado, Montana, Utah, Wyoming would be the Rocky Mountain states, if you will, and those are really the hotbeds of oil and gas development.
Let me step back to what you were saying about grazing land and the way it is managed. So in some circumstances, can the sage-grouse coexist with cattle?
Yeah, certainly there is a coexistence that's possible. The livestock grazing may not benefit the habitat so much as it may keep the habitat in the condition it was in prior to the grazing. And in some areas, that hasn't been detrimental to populations so much as it's kept the populations roughly the same over time. Now, that is not to say that we're in good shape. Oregon has a goal of approximately 30,000 sage grouse, which was the number that we had in 2003. Today, or this year, there are approximately 20,000. So we're down 10,000 in the course of about 15 years. And that number has been on a downward trajectory throughout that time with sort of variations over the years, but the trend is not good.
Is there any change in where the sage-grouse likes to live? I mean, we've heard from migratory bird people that the birds that actually do fly long distances are tending to move their ranges further north as the planet warms. Any changes in range like that for the sage-grouse?
One of the particular issues with sage-grouse is it's a very hard species to monitor. When you can find them, it's generally in the spring on what are known as their leks, where they do their mating. And those are difficult times to be out in eastern Oregon with mud and snow and rain. But what we can say is that sage-grouse generally have high site fidelity. They like to go back to the same places year after year after year and generation after generation, with some variations in that same region of moving between lek or lek complexes in eastern Oregon. But we have not, I don't think the scientific literature supports the idea that sage-grouse are moving northward or changing their range significantly based on climate change.
We're talking about the greater sage-grouse and efforts to manage the habitat for it across the western states, which is a different approach under the Trump administration than it was under the Obama administration. There's a comment period we'll talk about in just a moment, closing Friday of this week. Dan Morse is the conservation director of the Oregon Natural Desert Association. You can join us at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We will be talking to the Oregon Farm Bureau about their thoughts about sage-grouse habitat protection tomorrow at 8:30 here on the Jefferson Exchange. So Dan, was there an actual formal application for listing of the greater sage-grouse?
Actually, yes. There's been several over the decades, as early as, I believe, 2001, Jeff, and then again in 2003 and subsequently, with different organizations, including ours, suggesting that this species needed to be listed as endangered. The effort that is now in place, the 2015 sage-grouse plans, were a step to address the problems and therefore prevent the need for an endangered species listing.
All right. So the idea was that we won't give you the listing, but we'll give you this instead that would do some habitat protection and things like that?
That's right. You know, really, at the end of the day, I don't think anyone is anti-sage-grouse. And I don't think anyone is anti-sage-grouse habitat. I think most of us wake up in the morning and we think more about our daily routine and not about how we can have it out for the sage-grouse. And what these plans were an effort to have meaningful conservation on the ground that was broadly supported by different stakeholder groups and government agencies and that had scientific merit, some real teeth to actually do good things for this species. So in place of a listing, we have measures that, if they're implemented and implemented in a robust fashion, can do what it takes to conserve sage-grouse habitat.
So ONDA was on board. You felt okay, the Oregon Natural Desert Association, about the plan that was there?
In the end, the plans weren't perfect, and there were some elements of the plans that we did object to. But in the overall sense, we recognize that these plans were a positive step and that we would support them if the agencies really took to implementing them and followed through on all of the actions. And just if they did all of the things that the plan spelled out, it might just be enough.
It was a partnership, wasn't it, the Obama administration plan between the federal government and states?
Here in Oregon, which is what I can speak to best, we had a group called the Sage-Grouse Conservation Partnership. And that group was tasked with working on the State of Oregon's plan, but also had a lot to do with the BLM's plan because they work in concert. There is a close alignment between the two plans. And that effort went on for many years with a wide array of stakeholder input, and everyone had an opportunity to participate. So it really was a partnership.
So SageCon, is that the shorthand for it?
That is the shorthand, yeah.
It sounds like it brought disparate groups together, and there was some general, you say, sense of agreement that this was something that wasn't perfect, but at least was workable?
That's right. I would suspect that every stakeholder group had issues with different aspects of the plan. But in the broadest sense, I think there was support for sage-grouse habitat conservation. There was support for having a meaningful plan, and in that way, thwarting the need for an Endangered Species Act listing.
So what kinds of things were contained in that plan? I mean, we're talking about creating new habitat where there wasn't some before, or rehabilitating older habitat, or, I mean, something to give more places for sage-grouse to live?
Well, a little bit of both. It was, on the one hand, preventing new impacts to sage-grouse habitat. So things like making sure that the level of development or disturbance in a given area wouldn't go past the threshold that would start to impact sage-grouse, where there were going to be activities, development, mining, new roads, whatever it might be, to use what's called a mitigation hierarchy, which is to avoid the impact if you possibly can, minimize it if you can't avoid it, make it as small as possible with as few impacts as possible, and then if it's going to have some impacts, to mitigate that. And mitigation is that restoration component, Jeff. We're talking about planting native species. We're talking about restoring riparian areas. We're talking about, yes, the attempt to create new habitat for the species or to restore degraded habitat. It's a difficult notion. Restoring sagebrush habitat is a very long-term and very difficult proposition, and one that no one has a perfect answer for.
Is it a slow-growing kind of ecosystem given the harsh conditions?
Absolutely. If you think about a sage bush that you see out in the desert, that 3 or 4 foot tall bush might be 30 or 50 years old. So the difficulty is the long timeline to establish a sage bush or some grasses, some native perennial grasses. And the aridity of the desert, yes, makes it harder to establish seeds and to grow those kinds of plants.
We're talking about the sage grouse, the greater sage grouse, which is, of course, an object of discussion across the West, the inland West, and about the fact that there is now a further discussion about changing the federal management options on it under the Trump administration. There's a comment period that ends this Friday. Dan Morse is the conservation director of the Oregon Natural Desert Association. You can join this conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So how different is the proposal out of the Trump administration than what had been brought together under the Obama administration?
Here's the thing about the current process. There is no proposal from the Trump administration. Essentially, the comment period we're now in is asking the question, what should change? And I'll tell you directly, Jeff, for Oregon Natural Desert Association, we are going to say clearly and loudly to the Trump administration, these plans should not change whatsoever. And the distinction is this. I would suspect that there are extractive interests who are very interested in getting a second bite at the apple under the Trump administration with these plans because they see opportunity and they can pad their bottom lines by having fewer protections for sage grouse. The Obama administration plans, the sage grouse plans that are now in place, provide the level of meaningful protection that's needed so that we don't have to get into an Endangered Species Act listing process. So any effort by the Trump administration to pare back these plans leads us to this place of controversy and uncertainty and impacts to the bird that I think everyone is interested in avoiding. So I think we have a real contrast. One is a robust set of plans that can work, and the other is an empty set of questions and vagueness that will lead us into an anti-conservation effort.
And is SageCon, the Sage Grouse Conservation Partnership, is it holding together so far? Are you more or less still committed to keeping together what you've got, or is it starting to splinter based on the opportunity to make some changes?
Well, you know, we were together as a group here in the last month or so, and I continue to see stakeholders of all persuasions interested in having meaningful sage grouse conservation. That's not to say that there aren't subtle differences in the approach that folks might want to see, but a continued interest in that. It is my hope that that group will continue to support the BLM plans as they are and the state plan that complements it so that we can stick with the business of implementing these plans and protecting habitat.
Now, BLM is the big player in Oregon. It's got like 10 million acres of sage grouse habitat. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. Just more than 12 million acres of sage grouse habitat in eastern Oregon. And, of course, the state does manage some lands and has some management authority over private lands, but they are the smaller piece of the puzzle in eastern Oregon.
All right. So I know that we got the comment period that closes on this Friday, December 1st. There have been scoping meetings. Did anybody from ONDA attend that one in Burns on November 7th?
Yeah. In fact, I was there myself, and it was an opportunity for the BLM to discuss what kind of input that they were looking for. One would have the sense from that meeting that BLM is merely posing the question. They don't have any suggestions just yet on what might happen for the Oregon sage-grouse plan or how the process will unfold exactly, but they are asking if there should be changes. And again, for ONDA, we're saying no. Let's keep these plans in place and allow them to work. These plans haven't even had enough time to work, so we need to let them work just on that thought alone.
All right, so what they're looking for in this public input period then is just what do you think, basically?
Yeah, that's exactly it. Or what issues do you suspect need to be examined in this plan? And there may be folks who want to look at particular parts of the plan, but again, it comes back to whether this plan is on balance a good one and addresses multiple interests, or if certain interests will try to carve out their own piece here and upend the whole effort.
So, Dan, we just have about a minute left. Can you make a closing argument here about why people should care about the greater sage-grouse, particularly people who aren't living particularly close to it?
Well, I think for folks who may not ever have been to the Great Basin's high deserts, this is a wild place, just like a forest or a mountain range that has wildlife in it and streams in it, and it takes all of those species, all of those ecosystem components to function properly. And by protecting sage-grouse, we're protecting that entire ecosystem. And by protecting that ecosystem, we're also providing ways for the people who live and work in the high desert to, yes, earn a living, to know that they don't have a place that will be threatened by wildfire or invasive species or other impacts to that ecosystem. And really what we're doing is fundamental conservation, protecting the place as it has been for hundreds of years and trying to make it better.
That is the story of the Oregon sage-grouse as seen from the Oregon Natural Desert Association, where Dan Morse is the conservation director. The comment period, again, is until Friday, December 1st. You can reach the portal for comments through our website at jeffexchange.org. Dan Morse, thanks for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.